Some say you can find a woman looking for her daughter near a bridge up an old mountain road in western North Carolina. But others say the woman finds you. You're listening to Cold Brew, a true crime podcast fueled by Cold Brew Coffee. I'm your host, Caitlin Brewer, and if you like what you hear, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast. You can find me on social media at Cold Brew Crime to see images related to this episode. You guys, I'm back. Partially. You are listening to episode number 9 of Cold Brew. And if you're just now joining us, I recently moved across the entire Pacific Ocean. Not the entire, but it felt like the entire Pacific Ocean. And really the whole U.S. to come back home to North Carolina. And man, does it feel good. I've been here for probably, like a full month at this point. The dreaded 12-hour journey is behind me. It's a thing of the past. We have adjusted to the 6-hour, now 5-hour time difference, and I have indulged in almost all of my favorite foods. My husband will be joining us to literal morrow. Yes, I am recording this one day before he returns. I know, procrastinator. You know, it all kind of is a big blur. We're still living out of a suitcase. Our household goods don't really arrive until an undetermined date. So, you know, we're just doing the thing. We are about to dive headfirst into prepping our new home for all of our stuff. We have so much literal painting to do. So say a prayer, we make it through that. But it's all such a fun time. New home, new jobs, and familiar faces, what I've always wanted. Don't forget that this is the last episode before I announce the winner of the giveaway. So please, if you have not already, do not forget to go leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. One lucky winner will receive a Cold Brew True Crime t-shirt and a sticker. I'll be announcing the winner on episode 10. I just want to say thank you to everyone who's already left a review. They really make my day. Okay, quick disclaimer before I go to the coffee. I am recording with a whole new setup. I'm in a walk-in closet, if you will, that is so full of stuff that I take up like 4 cubic feet of space. So my microphone's a little different. I don't know how this episode's gonna sound, but, you know, I'm just going with it. So if my voice goes in and out, it's because I'm literally leaning forward this whole time to record. I just wanted to give a disclaimer. For this episode, I am drinking some special made cold brew from a sweet, literal little coffee shop in Burnsville called Maples Coffee Shop and Treats. I think they're also sometimes the sweet spot. Just depends on where you're looking for them at. They are a little bit outside of town and you can find them right at the base of Mikeville. They have recently moved into a bigger building and have created truly such a cozy little vibe inside. They offer coffee, teas, a ton of other specialty beverages, but really, you should go there for the cinnamon rolls. I'm sure any of their sweet treats on the menu are delicious, but this cinnamon roll has exceeded all expectations. Maples brews notorious coffee roasting beans and they have some on sale in the physical location, so keep that in mind. I also believe the cold brew was the Costa Rican blend, I think. And you guys, I am not even exaggerating when I say that I think this is my favorite cold brew so far. It is so, so smooth. It is so, so bold. And it is truly getting the job done. I am not sure that they offer the cold brew all year round, but if it is available, I give it a 10 out of 10 and you need to get it. Notorious Coffee Roasting is also local and in Madison County. You can find their coffee at several other coffee shops across Western North Carolina, and you can order from them directly at notoriouscoffee.com. Maples can also be found online. Their menu is on their website at maplesthesweetspot.com. They also have gelato. That's really good. And you can place like special orders for whole cakes and pies and really anything you can dream of. Susan, the shop owner, is a doll. And I highly recommend stopping by this local gym if you're ever in the area and get a chance. They're currently only open Wednesday through Saturday, 11 to 4, and all the good stuff goes fast, so you've got to get there early. Special thanks to Maples and Susan for fulfilling all my cold brew and cinnamon roll needs for this episode. You can find Maples on Facebook and Instagram at Maples the Sweet Spot. Now the moment we've all been waiting for, these silly ads, and then the good stuff. Okay, I'm just going to be honest and upfront and say it, that I had every intention of releasing this episode well before Halloween, and, you know, that didn't happen for many reasons, but mainly researching ghosts truly creeps me the heck out, and I'm busy. But honestly, I wanted to share all kinds of spooky mysteries in Western North Carolina, but the truth is, I personally have a hard time believing them, and the facts around any of those kinds of stories are basically non-existent, so it gets really tricky, like, to do solid research when you don't have solid materials. So, also, I can look at crime scene photos, like, all literal day, but as soon as I have to flip through some paranormal, like, potentially haunted ghost stuff, I am out. So, you know, I found myself chickening out quite a bit while watching some YouTube videos, and yeah, here we are. Anyways, I've decided to share one story that is kind of attached to some, well, one other well-known case in the area. And if you grew up in Western North Carolina, there is an incredibly high chance that you know about Helen's Bridge. Either you've heard the creepy tale, you've seen the bridge yourself, or you might have even witnessed seeing Helen herself. This bridge can be found in Asheville, North Carolina, obviously, on Bowcatcher Mountain, which overlooks downtown Asheville. It's a pretty popular term in the Asheville area. I read in several places how the mountain got its name, and I thought it was quite humorous. Whether it's 100% facts or not, I thought I would share. So in the mid-1800s or so, James Washington Patton, who was a prominent pioneer and merchant of the Asheville area, teased his sister-in-law, or his future sister-in-law at the time, Charlotte Carey, after watching her walk the mountainside with her beau, quotations, B-E-A-U. Patton suggests that she was tricking her beau to spend time with her. By doing this, thus the mountain was dubbed Charlotte's Bowcatcher. Before I go into details about the bridge and its purpose, I really kind of want to set the scene and explain a little more about the area of Asheville visually for us visual listeners. If you've never been to Asheville, which I know, I'm sure there's several of you, there's a few major areas just like to note so you can visually grab this. Patton Avenue is, you know, one of the main roads, and it merges into Asheville's historical downtown, which then becomes Tunnel Road, where you can find, like, the mall and the majority of shopping, like, in Asheville. So Patton Avenue and Tunnel Road are both pretty straightforward roads, you know, shopping centers and restaurants along both sides. Patton Avenue, like, you know, is more of a residential, you know, like a normal neighborhood. Tunnel Road is really mainly businesses and restaurants and such. But the downtown area between the two is really like a whole nother little world. To me, it's somewhat like a blast from the past. Like, once you're in downtown Asheville, obviously the majority of the businesses have redone the insides of buildings, but the structures on the outside, what you see are all still really old. They still have their original character, and it just is so beautiful. Asheville has a ton of history and dates back all the way to 1797. And to me, that Asheville history shines throughout its entire downtown. Asheville is like its own little carved out spot within the mountains of Western NC. And Beaucatcher Mountain is one of the mountains that literally goes right through it all. I mean, there's a literal tunnel that connects downtown and Tunnel Road, and that tunnel goes through Beaucatcher Mountain. So if you're driving up Beaucatcher Mountain, there's kind of two ways you could get to Helen's Bridge. One takes you over the tunnel that I'm talking about, and the other, you know, is just on the other side of the tunnel and is a little more winding road. It's kind of like its own little escape. You go from driving on a congested road to pretty much nothing but trees and a windy road. And Asheville overall kind of has that vibe. Like, besides its current overcrowded population, it has an abundance of these little escapes, if you'd call it that, hideaways kind of tucked back away from it all. And I think that's one of the main reasons why people love Asheville so much. Last week, I actually drove to Helen's Bridge myself with my sister to see it once again. It'd probably been 8 or more years since I'd been up there last. There's so much ivy and growth around the bridge that if you're not looking for it, you don't see it until you are literally under it. Once you see it, you immediately feel like you're in some kind of old storybook, seriously. It's an arched bridge made of quarried stone, and it sits on top of two massive rocks. And also, quarried stone, I think, just means like more man-made stone. I didn't Google it, so take that as you will. But each side of the bridge sits on top of two massive rock structures that are on both sides of the road, you know, and the road goes underneath it. So there's ivy vines dripping off all sides of the bridge. And once you're underneath it, I just kind of get a chill. Like, it literally feels cold and damp and dark, but there's light all around you. Like, it's not a long bridge. It's literally more like an archway over the road. It was created to connect the nearby Zealandia Mansion, hopefully I'm saying that right, to the rest of the roads in Asheville. The present-day Zealandia Mansion was built in 1908 by Philip Henry. It was originally built in 1887 by John Evans Brown, who had spent some time in California during the Gold Rush and then later in New Zealand. Once he returned to Asheville, he built the original Zealandia Mansion, and he lived there until his wife passed away. The mansion is a Tudor-style home that is at least 3 story tall, and it's beautiful. In 1977, Zealandia was listed in the National Register of Historical Places. It switched hands a few times since, and if I remember right, the sign in front of it today said something like New Zealand Public Holding Group, but also said private property, and my sister wouldn't let me drive her car up there, so I could only take a picture from afar. It overlooks pretty much all of Asheville, like sits on top of the mountain, I feel like. So I would definitely pay money to go inside of it. There's some YouTube videos online you can look inside. I think they have some art exhibits currently inside. But yeah, I'll post the photos that I took and I'll get some from inside the mansion that can be found online. So now that I've basically sold you on Zealandia and Asheville, let me talk about the bridge and its haunted legend. The story I have always heard was that there was a woman named Helen who hung herself on the bridge, and if you call her name at night 3 times, you will either see a ghostly pale woman appear in the distance, or if you turn your car off under the bridge, there's a chance it won't start again. I personally have never experienced either of these, but there's plenty of stories of people who have. After some research, I found some other versions, well, one other version of the story, that say the pale-looking woman like, will literally look at you and ask, have you seen my daughter? Apparently, the Helen that people speak of was in her mid-30s and had recently moved to Asheville. She lived in or near the Zealandia mansion with her infant daughter. Her daughter died by smoke inhalation from a kitchen fire that Helen survived. Another side of the story is that Helen was having an affair with someone who lived in or owned Zealandia, and that Helen got pregnant and hung herself because she was ashamed of people finding out about her unwed pregnancy and that the father was not going to support her. This legend has been passed down for roughly 50 years, with real people, like, backing it up, willing to share their story behind it. But where did it start? Was Helen real? Was the fire real? Did her daughter die in the fire? Or was she pregnant? Did anyone in the area know Helen? There's a lot of unanswered questions, so I'm going to break down what we know is true and what, well, isn't true. The local Asheville news agency, WLOS, did a piece on Helen's Bridge back in 2013. They claim there is no record anywhere of a woman named Helen committing suicide on the bridge. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen. There could simply just be no record of it, other than word of mouth. But it makes you think, if the fire department came to help with the house fire, they would have some type of record about the infant's death. But we don't know a year, or even a decade, or when this could have happened, so it's basically like finding a needle in a haystack. WLOS spoke with paranormal investigator and author Joshua Warren, who literally does this thing for a living. And through his research, he has found some very interesting possibilities of how the story could have really started. A historian named Vance Pollock came forward once he found an article that had been found in the Asheville Gazette from May 6, 1906. The headline said, "Tragic Death of James Monnery, Found Today with a Bullet Hole in His Temple." The article goes on to say that Monnery had been an employee of Philip S. Henry for years, and if you recall, Henry was the second owner of the Zealandia Castle. They had been constructing the bridge in 1906, and nothing is said about why Monnery would have committed suicide or where specifically his body was found, but what about the name Helen? Monnery's death doesn't explain Helen. A case I've been wanting to cover has been popping up during this research, and I think it's safe to say there could be some possible tie between the two. Helen Clevenger is Asheville's most infamous murder case, and one I've stumbled across often. She was born in Washington, D.C. on November 4th, 1917, and was a 19-year-old college student at the time of her death. She was planning on following her father's footsteps to become a chemist and was attending New York University at the time, but was traveling to Asheville with her uncle, William Clevenger. He was an agriculture and food science professor at North Carolina State College, now known as NC State. They were staying at the Battery Park Hotel, which would have only been about a mile or so from Helen's Bridge. And on July 15th, 1936, Helen turned in for the night around 10:30 and went to her room. There was a really bad thunderstorm this night, and so when a guest across the hall from Miss Clevenger heard a gunshot, they assumed it was thunder. The bellboy on duty that night noted when interviewed that a mysterious man was creeping around the hotel lobby that night. He was roughly 5'9 and maybe 160 pounds. The man fled the lobby and jumped 15 feet down off the hotel porch in the rain. The bellboy claimed that, you know, he felt it was odd, but nothing suspicious came up that night for him to bring this up or to chase after the man. The next morning, around 7:30 a.m., Helen's uncle found her in her room on the floor in her green striped pajamas. They were stained with blood. She had a gunshot wound in her chest, and her face was severely beaten. A .32 caliber pistol casing laid beside her body. Detectives from New York flew in to cover the case, and it received a ton of media coverage from the New York Times. By August 9th, the New York Times headline read, "Hallboy admits murder of co-ed, motive robbery." The boy, as they said, was a 22-year-old African-American male named Martin Moore. Weeks after this quick and secret arraignment, he went to trial. He was up against an all-white jury and faced two capital murder charges. Martin had alibis for the night in question, and he even testified that the confession had been literally beaten out of him with a water hose. Robbery was stated to be the motive, but nothing was stolen from the room. Moore was convicted within 4 days and sentenced to die in the gas chamber. Of course, his attorney pled for an appeal, but the North Carolina court denied it. On December 11th, 1936, Martin Moore was executed for the murder of Helen Clevenger. Many believe that Helen Clevenger never received justice because Martin Moore was not her true killer. He just happened to be the easiest target at the time. It could be said that Helen's spirit still lingers, waiting for true justice, and that she may possibly be the Helen hanging around the bridge. Cold Brew is recorded, edited, and produced by me. To be sure you don't miss future episodes, please subscribe to Cold Brew True Crime Podcast wherever you listen. Don't forget, this is the final episode to enter the giveaway. All you need to do is leave me a written review on Apple Podcasts. I'll be announcing the winners on the next episode. You can send any questions or comments about this episode to me on social media at Cold Brew Crime. As always, thank you all so much for your patience and support.